Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Koshin asked me to give a talk, and he asked me to name the talk or give it a title. I don't like that, but I came up with one, and the title was Zen Leaving Home, Arriving Home. So all of you here, actually, you practice Zen for some time, so most of you either read or at least heard some quotations from some of the scriptures, and one of the most famous one, Mahayana scriptures, is Diamond Cutter Sutra. And there's a line in it, very interesting line, which goes like this. One of the English translations is like this. Do not get attached to anything that arises in your mind. Very interesting line. Actually, it's this line was is directly connected to our tradition, to Zen tradition, because sixth patriarch, Queen Neng, when he was still a young lay person, he heard a monk reciting this sutra in the marketplace, and when he heard this line, his mind spontaneously opened, or he got the insight into his true nature. So if we can keep our minds like that, you know, then nothing is a problem. Everything is very easy. Everything is very easy. Everything is the way it should be. But this mind, this kind of mind which doesn't get attached, doesn't dwell on anything that appears in it, this mind, this is the essence of Zen practice. This is how we practice. It's not just sitting. You know? Sitting is, which we do here a lot, is just our body being unmoving, not moving at all, being still. But the essence of the practice is the mind, right? Not the body. The body only helps our minds to be unmoving. So Zen practice means, how do you keep clear or unmoving mind in any moment or in every moment of our lives? So everybody has one thing only. We have one thing only. You, me, Buddha had the same thing, any eminent Zen masters, everybody, Donald Trump too, everybody, one thing only. What is this one thing? It's this moment, nothing else. You know, we may think about the past, which is gone, the future, which doesn't exist yet. Even if we say this moment is already gone. So everything happens in this moment. So the only choice we actually have is being clear in this moment. That's all we can do. We cannot do anything else. And if we can do that, then nothing is a problem. So that's Zen practice. Yeah? Sounds simple. But there is a reason why it's called Zen practice or Zen training, because sometimes simple things are the most difficult things to do. And understanding the simplicity of it is one thing, but doing it every moment is another thing. That's why we need some practice. This keeping clear mind or Not getting attached to anything that arises in our mind. Sometimes we use different phrase or words for it, and maybe you heard it often. It's put it all down. So instead of grabbing or holding onto something. In Zen, our practice means put it all down, let go. Not difficult. When, my robes look a little bit different than yours, right? It's gray, and this is actually monk's robe. This is not. This is what monks wear in Korea, but it's Korean traditional clothing. It was the pattern for it. So when you become a monk, you know, in Buddhism, there is a name for it. And in Korea, in Far East, in Japan too, all of the Buddhist temples, you know, they all use Chinese, you know, classical Chinese. So everything, the Buddhist language is actually Chinese language. In Japan, it's pronounced in Japanese, makahanya haramita. In Korea, is pronounced in with Korean twist, mahabanya paramilta. Okay, so, but it's Chinese characters. So there is a term for the for becoming a monk, and this term, the name for that is chulga. Chul, this character chul means leave, and ga means home. So when you become a monk, you leave home. It's an interesting concept because it doesn't. I'm still in the process of discovering what that means. You know, it's not just an event like boom and it happens. It doesn't happen the moment you take precepts. You grow into it, and when. Before you become a monk, you have to undergo a period of training, which is called hengja training. Hengja is a person, literally means action person. They don't, they are not monks yet. They don't really practice much. They just come to a temple. They aspire to be a monk or nun, and they do all of the work in the temple, physical work. But before taking novice monk precepts, all of the hengjas in Korea from the whole country, they come into one temple and they undergo intensive training of about 2 weeks nowadays. And in the very beginning of this training, there is you have the interview with the first day you have the interview with three old monks who just ask you and pretty much ask you about your motivation and check that. And then you have, you know, they examine your body to see if you're able to be a monk. You have to move all of the digits. You have to sit in full lotus even for 10 seconds, but you have to put your... you are in just trunks, you know, no t-shirts, just trunks, you know, and then, you know, they examine everything. And then also there is a written test. And this written test... You know, at that time, I didn't speak any Korean. You know, I was really, it was pretty stressful because I thought, well, I prepared for, I memorized some things, but I, it's another story. It will be too long. We don't have time for that. But I wanted to say a little bit about this written test because, yeah, I learned some Chinese. So my older brother told me, just make sure you answer every question. If you don't know, it doesn't matter. Just answer every question. Write something. So the multiple choice was very easy because I was just, see. I was fastest, you know, from the whole group. I didn't really care. But then there were questions which you had to say something. And for that, I was writing all I knew in Chinese. You know. Buddhist Chinese, you know, and they praised me for my attitude. You know, it was very easy. But I know that one question I got right, because I remembered this. And this was the question about chulga, about leaving home. And the question was, what are the kinds of chulga? What are the kinds of leaving home? And basically, we have body and mind. So first is neither body nor mind leaves home. Then body leaves home. Mind does not. Mind leaves home, body does not, and both mind and body leave home. So when you see somebody dressed like me with no hair, that means their body left home. Mm-hmm. Mind, I don't know. But the most important aspect of that and the true living home is mind living. Mind living. And that part, it's very interesting because for me that part is the same for lay people and for monastics. Yeah, body part is different. You know, I live in different place. I live in the temple. I live with monks. We have different discipline. Our day maybe looks different, but that doesn't matter. You know? That is only to help our body to live. And that is this not getting attached to anything that arises in your mind or putting it all down. That's living home. That's living home. That's true living home. When I was still a lay person, you know, I spent a lot of time with Zen Master Sung San. I mean, I met him often and practiced with him. And he often repeated that when you are practicing person, you have to kill three things. You have to kill your parents, you have to kill your teacher, and you have to kill the Buddha. So by killing, I don't mean we should be Menendez brothers and, you know, take a shotgun and, you know, drop our parents. No, but absolutely cut the attachments to it. You know, these are three. When we grow up, we don't even know how close we are with our parents, even if we hate them. If we hate them, it's also attachment. It's negative attachment. Put it all down. Cut that. Yeah. Then when you practice, you get teacher. I'm indebted to my teacher a lot. I'm so grateful and obliged to him. But this attachment has to be cut off too. Yeah. And then finally, all the ideas we can have, everything we attained or we think we attained or we aspire to attain, the whole Buddhism, cut it. Yeah. That's living home. That's true living home. There was another thing I remember when I was still a lay person. Zen Master Sung San said it to me. I heard it first time from him. He repeated the saying, this Korean saying, garbage human being becomes a monk. Garbage monk becomes a Zen monk. And then garbage Zen monk becomes Buddha. So I like this saying. And when I became a novice monk, I was kind of very proud of this saying. I'm finally doing it. I was repeating it with pride. But as I went through my training as a novice monk, I look at the saying and I think, this should be taken literally, actually. I'm useless for society, so I had no business being here. Business being really useless. Yeah. That's not a metaphor. That's not something to be proud of. But there is some truth to that which resonates also with lay people. Yeah. We think all those things we do are very important and useful, and we can change the whole world. You know? And we get attached to it. We're holding on to it. And this is all garbage. This is all garbage. And only at the moment when we let go of it, then something can happen. Otherwise, our minds are full. Nothing can happen. Nothing can change. You know, Zen practice, as you all probably know because you've been doing it for a while, this is not a method of self-improvement. Yeah? I was waiting for Koshin to start listing my true faults, which he knows a few of. It's not a method of self-improvement. Yeah? It's not that when you practice Zen, you become a kind of sublime human being. No. I knew many, you know, clear people, clear Zen masters, even I met or heard of, and some of them are not very smooth human beings. Yeah? I met somebody who was an attendant to one of the most famous teachers who lived in Korea. He died in the 60s. And she said something which was translated to me in English. He was a prick. difficult, really difficult to help him. But he was very clear. And he was only helping other people. But it's not all those things which we may want or wish, this is all garbage. Get rid of it. Let go. Not difficult. When I started to, after I became a full monk, my life kind of changed, because first four years I spent in monastic training center with, like Koshin said, 25 other monks, Korean monks. And this was kind of like being, I called it the minimum security detention facility for juvenile monks. So it was kind of like training, and you are still, you just do what you're told. And very easy. This part was kind of, for some people, most difficult. For me, it was very easy. Because when no thinking arises, it's easy, it's harmony. You just, my Korean was also perfect then, because I knew how to say, Nesuni, which means yes, yes, monk. That's the only thing you could answer. Somebody talks to you, say yesunim, and you just do it. So perfect. My Korean was perfect. I could speak that with no accent. Everybody liked me because I couldn't say anything else. But then when you become a full monk, then my life changed. I kind of started to go on 3 months retreat and 3 months in between the retreats. So all of a sudden I realized I cannot do what I used. You could be in communication during this training, or you could do whatever you had some freedom later on. I cannot talk to people for 6 months. If I want to do something in Poland, I have to do it 3 months in between the retreats only. But my first retreat was in this place which is called Bongamsa Phoenix Rock Temple in Korea, and there is this place is a main Zen training place for the Korean Chogyo Order, which is the biggest Buddhist order in Korea. And the main teacher over there, he's very humble, so he just he calls himself Suja Sunim. His title is, which means the one who sits in the front. His name is Jongmyong Sunim, and I met him. Now I heard, my Korean was not good enough to understand all his talks, but some things I did, and some things other monks translated to me. So he was always talking about throwing everything out. He was using the word borida, so he was saying da borida hail. You have to throw everything out. One time I had a chance to talk with him with interpreter, and he was looking at me and says, "Yeah, you have to throw everything out, everything." And he says, "Come here to this temple, stay here 3 years, don't leave the temple grounds. Throw your cell phone," he said, "throw it away. Any connection with the outside world." And then he smiled. "But the most important thing you have to throw away is hope for enlightenment. Throw this out." And he said, "Then you're going to get it." And I kind of looked at him and I said, "Well, Sunim, why Bongamsa? There are many places in Korea and in this world I can do it." And he just smiled and he said, "Well, I like, that's because I like living with good monks." So I encourage everybody to come here who is able to. So the teaching, that little phrase, throw everything out, was very important for me, because I heard put it all down all the time. I heard that stuff. I heard that the Diamond Sutra phrase. But sometimes when you hear something said in different words, in different contexts, it becomes really fresh. So it kind of stuck with me. It stuck with me. And this putting it all down, throwing everything out, or living, truly living home, you know, we sometimes, we often in our, my tradition, we often use the words which I like, don't know. Keep don't know mind. That's the same point. True don't know. And then as this monk said in Bongamsa, this teacher in Bongamsa, then if you do this, if you throw everything out, you're going to get everything. He says, you're going to, kind of, you're going to get it, he said. But you're going to get everything. Then when that happens, then everything is true. You know, everything is true. Whatever you hear, smell, taste, touch, you know, and that's all true. All truth. You know, very important. So keeping this don't know mind, or cutting it all off, putting it all down, leaving home, it's really important thing. It's the most important thing, you know, in our practice. Because we always get attached to something. We always want something, you know. And this training is so simple here, you know, because when you come here, particularly when you have a chance to come to retreats, come. Because retreats is like, we sign for it, we pay some money, so we are here on our own volition, and then we have to follow the schedule. You know? And it doesn't really matter if we like it or not. You hear the signal, you just come to the Zendo. Or you go to have a meal, or you get assigned a job, and you're just doing your job. And it doesn't really matter if you're sleepy or rested, you like it, enthusiastic or not, or resentful. Just no matter what appears in your mind, you just follow. You just do it. So that's the method of the practice. You know? And really, the real treasure of it is together, doing it together. You know, in Korea we have this saying, Daejeong Saengwol, so community living and acting together. Mm. When I was in training, particularly in training, it was the most important thing is to do things together with others. And there were many times I was rebelling. I was like, I had on my forehead, it was like a neon writing, F-U-C-K-U. But I never said anything. My initial response often was like, yeah. But then you cannot. You just say yeah and you do it. And if the moment you say yes and you actually say it inside, then the problem disappears. It was all created in my mind. You know, like if somebody, even if somebody who is older than you, a monk, tells you to do something in its idiotic way, and you know that there are much better way, instead of thinking this is stupid, you just do it. And then everybody forgets about it, and there is another situation. But if you keep holding on to your idea, then it's only a problem. Then there is no harmony. Yeah? There is no harmony. So there is an old Korean saying, follow the situation, get happiness. Yeah? Very simple. You just follow moment by moment by moment, and then not happiness. Everybody is happy. Harmony. Yeah? Harmony. Yeah, it's not, maybe this life is not, maybe it's not comfortable. Maybe you don't get what you desire. But your desires, do you really need it? No. I would say most of what we desire, we don't need. We only think we need it. And that creates a lot of problems. And the clear reflection of that, is if you go on any news service, you know, nowadays. Nowadays, you know, our society is really advanced, right? Technologically, and we live in a good situation. It's mm-hmm. very rich society. America, in Europe, European, Far East also. Not bad. Good situation. But when you read the news service, it's just chronicle of human suffering. Mm-hmm. You know? Does it change that much? Yeah, it does when we follow our desires. It makes it worse. It makes it worse. So this simple thing of acting together, if you act together with other people, means your I disappear. Mm-hmm. Your I disappear. In in Korea, it's reflected in the language. Koreans will never say my country. They say 우리나라, our country. When Korean person, when I say we are both Koreans, and I talk to Koshin about my mother, I don't say my mother, I say our mother. Okay? There is no me, there is us. No? We. And it's very interesting part of the training. And I remember when I was a young student, Zen Master Sung San used to talk to us, together action, together action, together action. When I went to Korea, I realized where it comes from. That's how then everything is very simple. That's how monks are trained. That's what Zen training is actually about. This I has to disappear. It's the greatest illusion we hold. You know? From that, all of the suffering in this world comes from this I. Yeah? Nobody created it. I created it. So keeping this don't know is really important, because then once, if we really don't know, if we really don't make anything, if we really don't hold on to anything, if we really do not get attached to anything, then no problem. And no problem. Then everything is truth. Then we can get everything. Everything is ours. That's simple. That's simple. But these are the only words. Even if I would describe some of my experiences to you, this would be only my experiences. So everybody has to practice, and everybody has to attain them. Okay? But that part is only a step on the way. Maybe most difficult step, or it seems like that, or it's never-ending step, or better yet, is the step we have to repeat all the time. Why? Because there is only this moment. So in this moment, we put it all down or not. So maybe most difficult. But then, you know, even if we get to taste the truth, even if we have a clear experience of this truth or universe, you know, everything is empty means our I disappear. Even if that happens, then there is one more step necessary, big step. And that is, how does the truth function clearly in this moment? Very important. Very important. So that's, you can say, this is direction of our practice. This is the question, why do you practice? Not just that, why are you alive? What does it mean to be a human being? Why do we eat every day? That direction is very important. That step is very important. It's Buddhist, it's in all Zen traditions, everybody knows that those 10 oxherding pictures, right, which represents the Zen practice or Zen path. And the 10th one is the most interesting, as it's coming into the marketplace with open arms. You don't do it. If you think you're going to improve yourself, you may be mistaken. Okay? First of all, there is no yourself. There is no self. But for sure there is a lot of suffering. Okay? That we call a great bodhisattva way. That's the truth actually functioning in every moment very clearly. So that's the direction of the practice. So actually, if we come to the Zen Center and if we want to improve our life or change our life, it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. Actually, our initial motivation doesn't matter that much. It does not. If we practice and if we actually try and put an effort moment to moment to moment, our intention will become clear. Yeah? Will become clear. Because if you sit, right, sometimes maybe when you sit you have some interesting experiences and maybe blissful experience. Those are the worst kind. Because those are the easiest to get attached to and you want to repeat them. But maybe it's blissful, maybe it's happy. But I can guarantee if you do enough retreats, it's painful. It's boring. When you have to sit for 3 months and look at the same piece 4 square feet of floor in front of you, it's boring. No matter what your mind can create, it's also boring. One time I was doing a solo retreat, and I remember I was replaying the movie True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis. It wasn't a good movie to begin with. But after about 5 days of doing that, I was like, shut up! Enough! It was suffering. So you may think about the most pleasant things, but you cannot get them when you practice. You cannot get what you want. Actually, in our life, mostly, we cannot get what we want. So that's one of the causes of suffering. So why do this? Why do this? If we practice enough, then eventually we learn how to put it all down. It naturally comes. So our initial motivation, it doesn't really matter. What does matter is come and try. And soon enough, the question will appear, what am I? That question, without this deeply rooted question, what are you, what am I? Practice is not possible. Practice is not possible. That's the same question Buddha, historical Buddha Shakyamuni had. And he couldn't stay in his comfortable situation. He went off and started practicing. And most of the people who come to the Zen Center, they come here because something is not right in our lives. Because something is lacking or missing, or some suffering appears. So that means question already appeared. So when that question becomes clear, then don't know appear. Then putting it down or leaving it all is possible. Then eventually, not just leaving it all, then we have to pick it all up and carry it away with us, our stuff. That's Zen practice. It's actually on our path, if some suffering appears and if something uncomfortable appears, it's good. Keeps us honest and keeps this question alive. If everything in our life goes well, according to our plan, or according to what we want, we screwed. I said this to people often. We are screwed because we become complacent. We become complacent, and then, if everything goes well, we go on vacation somewhere else. In the winter in here, we go to Hawaii. We have money. It's good. We try this, we try that. We don't want to practice. But if things are not going well, and if suffering appears in our lives, then it brings us back to this question. It brings us back to the unknown. So suffering is good help. Suffering is good teacher. But believe me, if we have our eyes open, there is enough of that around. We don't have to experience it in our lives. There is a lot of that. Then how can we stop practicing? Not possible. Not possible. We recited the four great vows, and the first one is sentient beings. The translation I remember is sentient beings are numberless. We vow to save them all. That's an interesting vow. If they are numberless, how can you do that? Big job. It's been 25 minutes?
Yes.
Why didn't you tell me?
30.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just, one time I was giving a talk in Poland, and I knew it was supposed to be about an hour, and then I was going to show people, it was for training purposes, and I was supposed to show people some forms of practice. And I had the same watch, and I put the watch here, in front of me, and I said, I still have time. What happened is it stopped working, right? So I went about an hour 15 minutes, and it was painful. But thank you for listening to me patiently, and I just... I want to thank you all for your effort and practice, and please continue. And the only way we can do it is
if we do it together. That's the best way and the easiest way. Even in the Lotus Sutra, Buddha Shakyamuni, if you read this scripture, repeat it a few times. Even, he said, in English it goes like, even Buddha cannot do it. Only Buddha and a Buddha can do it. Okay? So this is very important part. This is the great advantage you have here. You live here on, or stay here on Vashon and come here to practice, and you have this place. Use it well. Then you can change everything. Okay? So you have any questions?
Please. Why did you come here today? Why did you come here today?
To talk to you.
Really?
For you, yeah. What's your name?
My name's Wes. What's
Wes. My name is Chan Moon. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I thought you were going to say, I don't know.
No, I knew that before I bought a ticket. Koshin told me he broke the news. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
I wonder whether you think it's possible to get attached to putting it down.
Oh yeah. You can get attached to anything. I mentioned this when I came. Remember this guy who was practicing with Sasaki Roshi, and he was a poet. What was his name?
Steve Sandfield.
It was beautiful hand-bound collection of poems. I just remember two lines from one poem. Head monk for 30 years and still proud of it. So you can get attached to anything. I saw people who practiced for a long time, and in Korea they have the term for that. Instead of putting it all down and your ego falling apart, the ego becomes diamond ego. Mm-hmm. Hard. And you can be proud of that. That's why actually there are two things which are the most important in our practice. Good teacher and Sangha. When Zen Master Sungsan, before he was actually, the year he died, early in the year, somebody asked him a question, "Sir, you are very sick. If you're not going to be with us, what is the most important thing for us to do?" And without hesitation, he said, "Dobban." Dobban is a friend on the way. Because Sangha keeps us honest. Sangha, other people who practice, they keep us honest. Whatever, cause and effect, always very clear. But when we practice together like that, we put out something, other people's minds are like mirror, it comes right back to us. And then during practice, that's the value of together practice. People don't put up with crap. What's the saying with the fooling other people?
I was going to say rocks in a bag.
That's
mutual polishing.
Yes. We use the potatoes and the stick and the water, when potatoes rub against each other. But that together practice and practicing with others, you cannot get attached to putting it down. You have to put it down too. If you get attached to it, it's going to come back to you. Early in my practice, I was started a Zen center in Poland somewhere with friends. And I was actually wanted to get it, right and practice, and I wanted everybody to practice. A very difficult situation. It was rented. We rented a floor in a house, and there were three rooms. One was meditation room. One, two girls lived in it, and the other one was day room, and four guys lived in it. And I wanted to practice. We practiced every day, but sometimes people didn't want to. Sometimes they wanted to relax. I wanted them to practice. So finally. And I was there, sitting and getting proud. So finally, one of the guys took me aside and gave it to me. And I realized that that was maybe a mistake. So
sometimes I think it's time to pick it up sometimes, you see.
Yeah.
We have to put it down, and then we have to learn to pick it up.
Yeah. Yes.
You have to learn both of those motions.
And you have to do it in every moment. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, yeah, you let go, you put it all down, but this moment happening. So, and you are in it.
And you have to meet it. Yeah.
And if you are in this moment, and as you said, if you're meeting it, then you're picking it up. You know? Mm-hmm. But there's kind of subtle difference. If you really truly put it down, then you can meet it. Then you can pick it up. You know, then you can pick it up. Sometimes you have to pick up and not only, you know, what's in front of you, but kind of plan ahead. You know, sometimes thinking is necessary. Sometimes thinking is interesting faculty. You have to think what you're going to do next moment. That's clear thinking, if there is no I. But if you drop your I, then you can do this picking up. That's why.
Next moment. It's time for
that's all.
Moment. That's it.
One question only.
Easy two, question. Two or three.
Easy question.
Okay. I wanted to give you a softball.
I wanted to give you something. These are the incense from. In Korea, there is one company which has been started by monks, and they make incense with no. They don't use any artificial ingredients. Mm. My friend Hyun Munsunim, who maybe some of you met here. He, when he was giving it to somebody, he says, "This incense is really natural." He says, "You can eat it," and he takes one and he ate one. I'm not gonna do this because I don't like incense; it doesn't taste good. But at least it's the least harmful one I know. So it's for you for practice.
Thank you very much.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.